College football fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to talk, what else, some college football in week seven. This year, in general, of college football has just been silly. I mean, it has been delivering week after week after week after week. We knew, coming off a great weekend last weekend in week six, we knew what was on paper. And, you know, just like in boxing, you could put a fight on paper and you think something's going to be great or good or whatever, styles match up, and then it turns into a stinker, a one-sided fight. But this week, you know, but three different games featuring undefeated, I almost said fighters, teams all across, you know, conferences. Just a phenomenal weekend in the sport. We had so many tight games within the top 25. Obviously highlighted by Alabama and Tennessee in a crazy, crazy game. Big, big win for the Tennessee program. It's been a long time coming. And no matter what happens this year, I think you can officially say they are back. And then TCU, another great game going on at the same time. I mean, when it was 42-42 and 30-30 in fourth quarter, I was just like, man, I'm glad I had the weekend off so I could check this out. So there's a variety of games that we will recap. And then we'll look, you know, to next week as well. Syracuse, undefeated team. It'll be interesting, you know, what they can do outside of the dome. They're pretty big, you know, underdogs against Clemson at home. UCLA and Oregon, big, big game in the Pac-12. Spread's actually gone up just a little bit in favor of Oregon. Texas visiting Oklahoma State, coming off a heartbreaking loss. Mississippi, Alabama, Kansas State, and TCU. I swear to God, the Big 12 is so, like, layered with depth that every week there's just great games, and usually it's two great games. So, yeah, man, this is just going to be a fun one again. Like I said, great year for college football. And I had my best week probably ever betting college football. I just got, you know, just lucky every turn up the corner. So anyway, we will be talking about it in just a second. If this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. However, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope It Open. Download the show directly there. Listen to the browser. You can find this here, College Ball Show, under the Rope It Open Radio podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Spreaker, Stitcher, Player FM, Google Podcast, TuneIn, and many other platforms. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. And one more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you have and you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. It is the best of live TV and on-demand. There's no annual contracts, no hidden fees. Plus, you get to enjoy regional sports networks without the additional fees. If you choose the Choice or Ultimate package, that gives you 3 free months of Showtime Stars, Cinemax, and Epix. That's a savings of $160. And for a limited time only, the prices start as low as $49.99 for 2 months. That's DirecTV Stream. All right, let's bring in the co-host, Marshall, here. I mean, it's really hard not to start any place else but that crazy, crazy Tennessee game, you know, getting the job done at home in Alabama. But how are you doing, fine sir? What a week in a college football.
So I have a economical question for you, Chris. And, you know, you pay attention to a little more of, like, you know, how our economy works in this country and, you know, blue-collar men, white-collar men. Hear me out. I'm very confused as to why the University of Tennessee, who, mind you, I think there was 106,000 people at that game who were probably having food, drinks, paid for parking. I believe tuition there is more than $2,000 a semester. So what I don't get is you have the biggest win in the century of the 21st century of your football team, but then you're asking for donations for a goalpost. Like, it blows my mind. And I know we'll get to the game, but it's like, first off, how expensive is a goalpost? And secondly,
I was going to say, let's get on eBay or, you know, does Amazon have goalposts?
The gate they must have made for that game and the revenue that school makes, yet you're saying, hey, guys, you know how you chuck that goalpost in the river? We need some new ones. We need y'all to help out. Like, man, colleges, like, holy shit. Like, dude, you can afford it. Like, you're the University of Tennessee. You're a big university. I guarantee you, whatever you use for ticket revenue for that game could buy you goalposts. If not, Chris, if goalposts are like $1 million per goalpost, it's like, dude, whoever's building goalposts, we need to buy stock in that company, my friend, and start making some cash with it.
$11,000, $10,909.95 on Anthem Sports. You can find it. There's also a pro one. That's a college one, by the way. Pro,
oh, well, you need the right distance.
$300. What the hell? That's kind of weird. But yeah, the college one for $10,000. I'm pretty sure. You know, it's one thing to be like, hey, you know, donate to the school or
sure,
you know,
yeah.
Whatever. You know,
yeah.
I don't know, alumni, you know, let's put some money in the pot, you know, whatever. I get that stuff, but yeah, it is kind of, I did see that, kind of random. But before the goalpost went in the river,
which is such a cool sentence to say, my friend, if there was like a bingo card of college football events to happen this year, chucking a goalpost in the river is probably on no one's college football bingo card, man. And that's why we love this sport.
It reminded me of those old Confederate stuff that people kept throwing, you know, into water if it was near.
Oh, yeah.
But as far as, like, the only one I remember as far as the goalpost, well, two of them in the dome, in the Metrodome, one of them was the Badgers block punt, scoop, score, or just recovery touchdown. Just a miracle win by the Badgers. They took the goalpost. Some Iowa fans take goalposts. The Vikings fans took the goalposts someplace way back in the day in the 80s. But, yeah, that is crazy. Anyway, let's get to the game.
All right. So.
I'll
go. I was able to meet up with my Tennessee friend, which was awesome. She grew up there. She's been to games there. That's her squad. She had her Vols hat on, so I'm very happy she got the dub. We talked about it last week. I remember being shook, honestly, and surprised of how efficiently Texas had passed the ball in Tennessee. Like, if you go back to the first quarter of that Texas game, that Ewers, when he was healthy and in, was making long passes down the field consistently against the Alabama secondary. When he went out, it changed. But you're like, okay, that was rare for a Bama secondary to give a big place. And even though the quarterback for A&M wasn't that good last week, he put up respectable numbers for his kind of garbage self. So going to that game, I'm thinking, okay, you're at home. You have the best quarterback Bama's seen all year. You would assume they're going to, you know, take their shots. But what I didn't quite expect was Chris, there was – Tennessee almost had a field day. When you have one receiver that gets five touchdowns and a handful of plays that are over 50 yards, just to give credit to Tennessee's offense as I get into the game here, sorry for the goalpost rant, the Tennessee passing offense was on point. And I got to give them credit because even when you watch football games on Saturdays and Sundays, there are quarterbacks who, as good as they are, NFL or college, will miss a pass. I'm not saying that Hooker was perfect, but, dude, that place was rocking. He stepped up, and he literally almost, I would say, put things in perspective, he almost went out and pitched like a no-hitter. That dude barely missed any spots, barely had any turnovers, and for the Tennessee offense, they really did expose the Bama secondary. They had very few mental mistakes, and that offense really did show that Bama's secondary is a weakness, and they cashed in on quite a few big plays.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd have to say it the opposite way, too, if you look at the numbers. But
oh,
yeah,
sure.
I think that one of the key plays was, you know, when they only had, like, 15 seconds or whatever to get close enough, and, to, you know, three plays, 45 yards, and that last pass the pass and the catch in traffic, Keaton or whatever, that was that could have been one of the best, you know, plays of the game right there, just in the clutch and all that. But you're right. I mean, I didn't expect them to get up 28-10, I will say that. You know, it was nice that Alabama did, you know, make it a game at half 28-20. You're thinking, okay, you know, let's see where this thing goes. Pretty crazy, though, because they ended up, you know, coming back from 18, getting the lead. And funny enough, like I said earlier, you know, fourth quarter, 42-42, and that TCU-Oklahoma State game is 30-30, and they came back from 17 or whatever it was. So, but just sticking to this game, for a second there, you know, I waited. I really wanted that plus eight. I remember talking about it on Monday, or was it Wednesday? Yeah, Wednesday. And I screwed up. I was like, man, I wish I would have taken that. It was already down to seven, bouncing around seven and a half. And then by kickoff, it was plus nine for Tennessee. I was like, I got to take it. And but it was kind of funny there for a second because I thought, oh, Bama and Vegas know what they're doing here. Because when it was when they were up by seven, after that scoop and the recovery scoop and score, and then that what appeared to be a long throw into the end zone, intercepted, ran back inside the 20, hence, you know, putting them almost in field goal range there, or basically in field goal range. I was like, dude, and they're not going to just sit on the ball. There's 3 minutes left, so they're going to at least kick a field goal. Like, there it goes, dude, 10-point game. I'm going to lose this bet, and it's all for nothing. And then all of a sudden, you know, you see the flag, they score a touchdown. To have a chance, though, to kick that field goal, and it wasn't like a super short field goal, let's be fair, but that thing was shanked right off the bat from Alabama. And like I said, that impressive, you know, three-play drive, that last toss in traffic to set him up there, the crowd went crazy. I mean, that was phenomenal. But when you look at Bama, like you said, 385, I think really the more telling thing, in a sense anyway, was also a buck 82, giving up a buck 82 on the ground, 4.7 a carry. That was a little like, wow, okay. On the flip side, though, you know, having Young back, they threw the ball 52 times. This is not the Bama, you know, 10, 12 years ago team. 52 times, 455 through the air. But, you know, 114 is pretty solid on the ground, Marshall, but 3.7 a carry. And here's the big one. They had the ball for 37-29 compared to 22-31. A lot of that was the quick strike Tennessee Vols, of course. But 17 penalties for a buck 30. And I remember, wasn't there like a 15-penalty game early? I believe there was.
Well, against Texas, they had a ton. They were between 12 to 15, yeah, or in that ballpark for sure, in the teams.
Right now, 15 for 100. I mean, in your two biggest games, to be that heavily penalized, that blows my mind because that's usually not the case, as we know.
Yeah, and you know, this is just – I think we're just seeing kind of a realistic team. Like, this is Saban, not his most, like – handcrafted, we're Bama, we do things the right way. And you got a really good example of that due to that brain cramp of the guy with the punt. I mean, that was such like a, like I heard it on a ESPN show or a podcast. It was like, Bama doesn't do that. And not that regular teams don't, but that's something Bama doesn't do. And it kind of hit me for a second. I'm like, you know what? That's really true. That is not a Nick Saban type play. You see it happen all the time, but not by Bama. And for that guy to just, for some odd reason, want to scoop up the ball when it to me, it didn't really look close, Chris, that a teammate had touched it. But to have that brain cramp and to kind of give up ideal field position for an offense who you had forced to a punt. Yeah, it's just they've played a couple of road games now where, you know, you're not in Tuscaloosa. You're getting pushed the brink. You're at stadiums that, I don't know the size of Texas is, but I'm sure holds at least 70,000 to 80,000. We're on the road, you're facing tough competition, and you get a little shook. So, I mean, nonetheless, they're still highly ranked, and it is Bama. But you're right, this is not the most organized team that Saban's had. But again, for God forbid he once has a bit of a letdown. And yeah, just to kind of cap off the Tennessee offense, that Jalin Hyatt, 6 catches, 207 yards for 5 TDs. I mean, dude, talk about having a game. Like, that dude went off. And I'll say this. I did give Bryce Young a lot of crap but I was kind of going back and forth on, like, him or Corral. Like, I thought Corral had a great year as well, but he didn't quite have maybe the pieces Bama did. I gained a lot of respect for Bryce Young from that game, Chris, because that dude took a beating. If the Alabama offense was getting NFL referees assigned to them that game, there would have been at least 3 or 4 personal fouls on Bryce Young where he got up, shook it off, and kept playing. In college football, there wasn't a refs didn't throw a single damn thing, which is so weird to think about. But that dude, he was already sore and hurt.
Yeah, so, you're right. He came in banged up on his shoulder, too, of all things.
He came in banged up in Tennessee. I'm not saying Tennessee was dirty. There was no, like, oh, that's a cheap foul. Yeah, it's just football. Yeah. But they rocked him again and again and again. And I got a newfound respect for him because that dude, he sucked it up. You know, he was in pain. And even if he wasn't hurt, a couple of those shots he took would have hurt anyone in general. But I tipped my cap to him. And it came down to a college kicker. We talk about that every podcast, every year. You know, it is nothing's ever a guarantee in college football with kickers. We saw a Missouri kicker who against Georgia hit 4 from over 50, but the week prior missed one from 24 that was dead center of the field. You know, nothing's ever a guarantee. And I'm pretty sure, Chris, I saw an angle where
distance, too.
But I never saw it conclusive, but I'm 98% sure that a Bama guy did hop over the line. That ball did get tipped. Some people are saying, oh, the Tennessee guy made a shitty kick. I mean, it went in either way. But I think that ball did get deflected. And if you see, like, kind of an end zone replay, that ball must have cleared the goalpost by about 3 to 4 feet.
It was close. That makes sense. You know, I never did watch that replay again, so that's good to hear. Because that was a horrible kick, if not, you know what I mean? It's like, when he kicked it, I was like, oh, that's short, dude. That is short. Like, I thought for sure it was short. It just looked short, and it just looked like a horrible. I thought I was watching a Viking game. You know, here we go again. We're going to overtime, you know? That was crazy, dude. That was crazy. I mean, that, what a game. And that, like I said, that shit doesn't happen as far as the atmosphere, as far as rushing the crop, you know, the field. Like, that stuff just doesn't happen in the NFL.
No.
We know there's better players. We know all this stuff. It's great. You know, we love us some NFL football. But when you look at, especially politics out of it, just college football regular season, not what has happened at the end of some years. But, I mean, it's, if you needed another example, and this, the rivalry stuff, just everything, like you said, with the song at the end, taking it back, claiming their song again, like, it's just so many layers to the you know, college football like that. And, you know, much like when people say when Miami is back, and they're not right now, but I'm saying, if Miami's back, it's better for college football. If USC's back, when Tennessee's back, I got to admit, it is better for college football. I mean, there's just no way around it. For years and years and years, they've just been rough. But yet, you still see a lot of people in that, like you said, large 106 or 107,000 people in that stadium. And they're probably still partying. I mean,
I mean,
wow. That was crazy, man. So, we're going to see if Tennessee can hold on. You know, now they're going to – now, you know, it's not over, you know. But, yeah, dude, that was miraculous. Anything else from that before we do get in that Oklahoma State, TCU, Penn State, Michigan? Michigan walked them in the second half, walked all over them. Obviously, we got a nice little rant coming up from the Utah-USC game. Any other items from that game that you want to add before we get into some of this other stuff, man? Lots to talk about.
No, I mean, we could probably do one podcast on that show, but no, we'll keep it moving. And as my co-host did say, at the same time, there was a great Big 12 game going on, which was an overtime game, which I was almost say, which Tennessee and Bama was, which almost did occur. But yeah, you had TCU who, to give them credit, Chris, won this football game. Just kind of, you look back, you got rid of a coach who'd been there for nearly two decades. You were, you know, the players said they split ways with the coach. The last year kind of got ugly. You know, players were checking out, arguing, butt heads with the coaches, whatever. Okay. So you bring in a new coach from across the city at SMU, the guy, Sonny Dykes now comes to TCU, and you beat SMU in a close game by 42-34. You beat Oklahoma 55-24. Then you beat an upstart Kansas 38-31. And at worst, you're thinking, okay, maybe there's going to be a letdown spot. Because as we know, shit, NFL, high school, or college, if a football team wins a bunch of close games, you're going to have that one slip over, like, dude, how many more times can we get up for this game? Like, it happens to any level of football. And you weren't shocked, really, as my co-host said, they were down early. TCU is down early. You're thinking, okay, like, dude, you've been playing good football. But Oklahoma State's a good team too. Like, okay, you're down, but you know, it's like if you lost the game, it won't be the end of the world. No one was picking TCU to go 6-0 to start off the season. And you go into halftime and Oak State's up 24-13. Okay, well, you know, again, not the end of the world, but maybe they were due for a letdown spot. But not so fast. Again, third quarter is a bit sluggish. They basically traded field goals. But in the fourth quarter, Chris, with about 13 minutes-ish to go, TCU is down 14. They're able to score 14 more, and they were able to win in overtime. So, again, this guy won't get – maybe we'll get coach of the year. But to give the new coach credit, to walk into a program, change morale literally in your first year, reinvent an offense which had always been struggling under Patterson. That was kind of the knock on him. He was a defensive guy, but not necessarily an offensive guy. And you get this Max Duggan, who last year for TCU looked okay, but wasn't great. I really got to tip my cap. I know Kansas has gotten a lot of love, which they deserve, because they've kind of jumped out on the map out of nowhere. But I honestly feel, Chris, that TCU is just as much of a shock. I know that they're obviously been a more dominant football franchise for college as opposed to Kansas, but for the last 3 to 4 years, they've been TCU's going to win seven games a year, and maybe knock off like Baylor or Oak State or Texas in an upset, but like they're just okay. Hey, tip the cap to a coach who's reinvented stuff. You're 6-0. You had a hell of a comeback, and dude, they're just playing with house's money, and they're still rolling dice the crap stable, Chris.
Yeah, you're right, because that's a big shadow to replace. And, I mean, shit, he won so well they went into the Big 12. You know what I mean? Like, he got him into the Big 12. So, I mean, yeah, that was it is a great story. And obviously, once you win someplace, unless it's years and years and decades ago, you always know you can win there again with the right
coach, sure,
the right program and all that. And it does look like they made a great decision. Duggan, 23 of 40 is not blowing you away, but the multi-purpose, you know, yards he gets, just overall, though. I mean, they had a 104-yard rusher, right? Miller, 22 carries. But then two more guys had 9 and 11 carries. Overall, 43 carries, 224, 3 tutties, 5.2 a carry. And this wide receiver just keeps that Quentin Johnston. That dude is just a baller, man. I mean, he's made a lot of great catches already this year. He had a hell of a game, too. A big, big game. So, yeah, I mean, credit to them. Sanders looked came into the game and looked a little banged up. It kind of played out that way. But, yeah, to come back, you know, down 16 or whatever it was, that was humongous. That was really big, and the time of possession wasn't a whole lot of turnovers on both sides. Fairly clean game penalty-wise. They just made the plays. And you're right, this Duggan, he's had a phenomenal season. And, you know, obviously we'll talk about the game they got coming up because it's very similar styles. But a great, great win for TCU, and it'll be interesting if they can, you know, keep going. And once again, tip of the cap to the Big 12 this year. Every week it's at least a big game, but it kind of has been, I think the last few weeks, It feels like it's been two big games. We got that one on the schedule. Just kind of working our way through some of this. Penn State in Michigan. Penn State was actually, you can't really believe it, but they were actually up in this game at half. I mean, not by a lot, but they were up. So I was like, okay, well, you know, let's see. They had never they had never trailed Michigan so far because, you know, they've had a light schedule. And, man, did they run away with it. I mean, 55 carries, 418, and four touchdowns to boot on the ground. Just ran them over. And we were talking about the stat coming into the game. Penn State, in the first, five games, gave up 399 yards and a touchdown on the ground for the year. I mean, that's a freaking crazy stat to turn around and be like, oh, well, forget it. We're going to lose this game. So they ran away with it, no doubt about it. And then obviously, we'll get into that USC Utah as well. It looked like USC was going to run kind of away with it earlier, at least keep that little double-digit deficit, you know, away. Just keep that little lead. And I got to say, I was surprised that they went for two. It makes sense. Like, it does line up, especially quarterback for quarterback. That's a smart move. But in my head, I was watching fights at the time, and I'm looking at the TV, looking at my phone, doing this. And I got a bet on the game. You know, I got plus 3.5 USC. So I'm thinking, dude, they're going to tie. It's going to go to overtime. God dang it. And who knows what happens in overtime. And sure enough, they went for two. That was a pretty ballsy move, but I get it. So there is some other games we'll talk about. But those two in particular, and obviously we have a little segment here for my co-host with his USC rant as far as the polka dots.
Yeah, to wrap up the Penn State Michigan quickly, because we did talk a lot about Bama Tennessee, so we want to keep staying on pace. But hey, neither team had played great competition yet, and Michigan did get up 13-0 early, and then Penn State made a drive and they made a pick six after that. So literally, I went from changing the channel back to the game, and I went from Michigan's up 13-0. And about 2 minutes later, they're down 14-13. Like, what the hell? And that was kind of the little flash in the pan that Penn State had, because besides that, that game was a beatdown. So again, hey, give Harbaugh credit. You're literally on the second year of being on like a heater. Like last year, they beat Ohio State. They ran the ball. They played great defense. They controlled the clock. They've done the same thing again this year. And again, they demolished Penn State, who was ranked 10th in the country. So credit to Michigan. It looks like we're probably going to be lining up for another great Michigan-Ohio State end-of-the-year battle the way these teams have been playing football so far. So hats off to them. And if Penn State gets blown out, I never shed a tear on this podcast. But for shedding tears, again, I was telling Chris, I've done this podcast with him for close to a decade now. I rarely ever complain about refs, but I will complain about refs a little bit here. Now, USC did lose. Okay, it is what it is. They lost. But, man, there was some really heartbreaking calls that didn't go their way. And when you do have – it is one thing if your team gets beat by 30, you're like, God, the refs suck. But when you lose a game by one and you had a couple of calls that allowed Utah to score a drive prior in the fourth quarter before that game-winning one, and even then, when Utah scored, as my co-host said, they went for two. It was an aggressive move, but you're at home. Neither defense was really stopping each other. So, like you said, wouldn't you have made a gutsy call, but it paid off. They called the right play. USC ran the kickoff back to, like, the 45-yard line. So, you're thinking, okay, like, all right, as a USC fan, I'm thinking we got two timeouts. We got to move the ball about roughly 25 yards to have a chance at the field goal. Now, again, as you know, as we saw earlier with Alabama, a college kicker is never a guarantee, but we got a chance. And then you see the replay of the holding they called. And this USC player was blocking a Utah guy in the kickoff. The Utah guy literally fell down, and they called a hold. And it was one of those things where you go from having the ball in the 45 to being on about your own 15. And being on your own 15 compared to your 45 is a massive difference. Caleb Williams wasn't able to pull out magic tricks. And USC did lose. It's frustrating because I do think the refs kind of screwed us on a couple of calls there. But at the end of the day, Utah Knight is a very good team. For speaking of all the years we've done this podcast, they rarely lose at home at night, Chris. They really do. In a conference game, when Utah plays at home against a tough opponent, whether it's been Oregon, Stanford, USC, UCLA, they've been like kind of a under the radar to maybe like a huge ESPN Twitter follower kind of, like, they're not like in the mainstream media all the time, but they've had one of the better programs in the country for the last almost decade. And USC got a much better performance from Utah than they got against UCLA last week. And hey, to give credit to Rising, I ripped him. I said the dude's made quite a few clutch mistakes in his losses to Florida and UCLA. He was 30 for 44, threw for 415 with two touchdowns. That USC defense got exposed a little bit for the first time all year. A couple of calls didn't go their way, and their defense couldn't stop but play at the end there. And USC goes down. The season's not over. Their chance of making the playoff might be. But, hey, tip the cap to Utah. You got beat up in your first two tough games this year, and you bounce back and win at home. But that's really been a pattern, Chris, ever since Whittingham has been their head coach there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It was just it was an interesting game. I mean, very, you know, like I said, for a second there, it did feel like the USC was going to be able to have like a 10-point lead for the rest of the game. And it changed pretty quick, and it was just back and forth, you know, dramatic fashion. Like I said, the refs played a part in it, but, you know, there was 12 penalties, so could have seven in it. That could help you out a different drive. It is tough to win there, even though it looked, you know.
Oh, yeah.
College football, like, it looked like Utah was not the same Utah, and who knows, maybe they won't be still. You know what I mean? Maybe this was, you know, spur them and they'll win out the rest of their games, you know, maybe. But also, you know, coming into this one, it kind of seemed like, I don't know, man. They just don't seem like they got the same defense and all that. And to be fair, they gave up a bunch of points. So, but they,
true,
like you said, you got to give credit to that quarterback as well. Both just fun game there. Clemson had a comfortable lead and kind of just sat on it against Florida State, 34-28. So that was just a solid win. Florida State's kind of, they're not back, but they're a quality team right now. Not great by any stretch, but it's not easy to go there and win. They've been playing pretty good this year. NC State and Syracuse, now that NC State, you know, has their quarterback out, they could really just run the ball. Syracuse did enough, got a lead, kind of sat on it, added to it at the end, 24-9. Speaking of pride and having your quarterback back and playing well, Kentucky got the job done against Mississippi State. I didn't quite know, you know what I mean? I was like, man, once again, kind of like Utah, where you're like, you know, Kentucky this year, I just don't know. But, Levis came back, played well, no doubt, but Rodriguez, 30 carries, buck 96, 6.5 a carry. I mean, that was an impressive win because Mississippi State, you know, was starting to look really good. So I thought that was big. And then I do want to say, so what's up with Auburn being super competitive with Ole Miss? I thought they were done this year. Penn State beat them 40-12. What's up, man? What gives with this Ole Miss squad?
I guess maybe should have ran up the score a little bit more, but I've said from all along that this Ole Miss team is, it's like, I think they're still trying to gel. Defensively, they've been pretty strong this year. Defensively, that wasn't the case against Auburn. But maybe now the offense starting to balance itself out. At the end of the day, Ole Miss is one of the games they're supposed to this year. They've been favored in all of them. And now they got LSU coming up, which should be a very, very fun game 5 days from now on the calendar. But, hey, Lane Kiffin.
Nuts, I mean, they have 300-yard rushers. You know, they had 448 yards. They ran the ball 69 times, 6.5. Now, they did give up 300 yards rushing, too.
It is crazy just how much this game – I think Lane Kiffin's realized that, hey, Jackson Dart, the guy from USC he wanted, is not maybe quite the quarterback he expected. So we're going to run the ball religiously. Like, we used to think that Nick Saban ran the ball a lot, Bama, before Kiffin got there. This has taken that to a whole new extreme. Now, to give Jackson Dart the quarterback credit, he did have 14 carries for a buck 15, but Zach Evans, 21 carries, a buck 36. Quishon Judkins, 25 carries, a buck 39. Like, it is so weird to see a Lane Kiffin team that runs the ball religiously and has a defense that, for the most part, plays pretty well, or at least makes plays and turnovers when they need to. So, hey, they're 7-0. I think they've already cast their season win total, or the season win total was either 6.5 or 7 or 7.5. They're starting off 7-0. I can't complain. I do think that they're still a little nervous about the quarterback, though, because even in that game, he was 9 of 19 for a buck 30. Like, when they play a little more higher caliber opponents, that Jackson Dart's going to have to make some plays with his arm, or they're going to have to keep running the ball religiously, because the start of the year has been good, but now you finish at LSU, at Kyle Field and A&M, you play Bama, at Arkansas, and then you have the Egg Bowl. I mean, all five of those opponents, none of those are easy. I don't think they'll lose 5 in a row, but they could.
Kentucky's their best
win, right? So far, yeah, you beat Kentucky. That was a good win.
Where
the defense played good.
Too, where they turned it over, too, at the end of that game.
Yeah, and Auburn, I mean, Auburn's not a shit opponent, but they're nothing high class either. So, yeah, you won every game you're supposed to, and now you got to try to win a couple you're not supposed to. But, man, going at LSU, at Kyle Field, and host Bama, that's a tough one. But, thankfully, they do have a bye week before they play Bama, so that could be beneficial for sure.
No doubt about it. My Minnesota Gophers go down on the road. I had that plus 6.5. It did seem like I thought that was a crazy number, but I did dig a little bit, and like we were talking about last Wednesday, I didn't even realize the quarterback had gotten hurt, and all of a sudden he comes back and just beats us up. We knew both running games would be there, but the pass game was the difference in that. That's how they won the game. They made enough explosive pass plays, and the pass game was horrendous on the other side of that. You know, maybe it was just 1 week. I mean, Michigan State is a very mediocre team this year, but on the road to do what they did to them, I was pretty impressed, especially without their number one receiver. But I think now it's starting to catch up to them, and they just can't move the ball that way. So definitely disappointing. Oklahoma looked a lot better than they have of late as far as on offense. Having Gabriel back, they beat Kansas 52-42. I had Kansas plus 9, feeling real good about it, but I can't complain overall. A couple other games to talk about. Oh, yeah, Texas did. They were just barely getting by there for a second, but Texas did, you know, get the dub. That's ultimately what they need, especially heading into next week and some games coming up. Iowa State did show their grit, though, like they have almost every game. They're not winning many games. But the defense is legit, 24-21. So that was a nice win for Texas just because, you know, they got to keep winning. A lot of times Texas in the last chunk of years probably would have ended up finding a way to lose that game. Another game, Arkansas, BYU was very close. Then Arkansas just jumped on them to close the game, 52-35. Any other games that you want to talk about here, sir?
I guess just for you to wrap it up, I was just scrolling through. Notre Dame losing to Stanford surprised me. Notre Dame was actually and to give credit to Notre Dame, I know they're not ranked, but that's because they've had a hell of a schedule, in all fairness. But if you were to bet Stanford, I mean, I believe they were plus 12. That was a nice little payday.
Plus 12, dude. I was eyeballing it. I didn't take it, though.
I mean, yeah, well, you lose to Ohio State, you lose to Marshall, you beat Cal, you win at Carolina, you beat BYU in Vegas, now you lose Stanford. Man, that Notre Dame coach, I'm sure they're probably getting mad at him, but they've had a pretty tough schedule. And speaking of people who've had tough schedules all year, this team might have the toughest schedule in the nation. But, hey, credit to Arkansas and Sam Pittman. I think they're kind of like our third adopted team. That dude, I've always just kind of liked him.
KJ, again, every game just gets.
And, and, I know. I feel like he gets hurt almost every game, yet the dude still goes out there and, like, does his job. Like, whatever NFL team drafts him for whatever they need him for, you're getting a dude that has about as much guts as possible. Like, I hope that guy was.
Tackles on that one run? I mean, that, he is a blast to watch.
Whatever he ends up doing in professional football, I hope he's successful. Because, I mean, for all we know, is we only know him as a football player, not as a person, but that dude plays with all the heart he can get, and there's a lot of quarterbacks who probably would sit out with the injuries that guy sustains every week. But Arkansas, their deadly schedule continues, but hey, they're 4-3. They beat BYU 52-35. BYU, another team whose schedules have been crazy, but hey, to give credit to Arkansas, you're 4-3 now. You pulled off a nice win at BYU. Yet you now go Auburn, Liberty, LSU, Ole Miss, Missouri. Actually, it's not that bad. But hey, credit to Arkansas. We always true. Yes. Bad. No, you're right. I just kind of like watch that team because they like to cover. They cover bets a lot.
True.
So if you're ever looking for a team if you're ever looking for a team just to blindly bet, Arkansas is going to pay a lot of bills for you. Hey, yeah. Besides that, I think we kind of hit on everything pretty well.
West Virginia Thursday night game was nuts too. West Virginia pulled that off 43-40. I remember watching that game. That was.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of defense being played in that one, my friend.
No, not even a little bit.
But yeah, that we didn't preview it last.
To double overtime normally would be huge news, but
true. Yeah,
we know that it's not.
And I was just going to say, normally we would preview last week to LSU-Florida, which LSU right. did win 45-35, but the way the teams have been playing, you know, it's not quite as big of a deal as it was, but that was still,
yeah,
if you're Brian Kelly.
Together a little bit.
Yeah, and if you're Brian Kelly, that's one week of where the media is not going to be down your throat so much as you're going in there trying to slowly switch your ways. And I guess my last game to hit on this week, man, honestly, Purdue, Chris, might be just an automatic over every week. That team plays fun games. They stick in them. And honestly, dude, if it wasn't for like kind of a late game hiccup against Penn State, yeah. Purdue could easily be 6-1 because they played Penn State that first game of the year.
Down in that fourth quarter, though, too.
Oh, okay. Well, of course, this is against Nebraska. And then Purdue almost also blew that lead to Syracuse. Man, Purdue.
That was a heartbreaker there.
Yeah. That was. So Purdue easily could be 7-0. I know that sounds crazy, but you have a quarterback that's really, yeah, a quarterback that's great and a head coach that's a good master game planner. So, hey, credit to them. But again, if you're looking to watch a close football game, Purdue's almost a guarantee to be close and score a lot of points. And, Chris, as I say that, their next two games are at Wisconsin and Iowa, places where you don't score points. So, I cannot, even though it's 2 weeks away, I'll be very curious to see what the over-under for the Iowa-Purdue game is because Iowa doesn't score, Purdue does. So that'll be an interesting one to check out from a gambling perspective. Maybe so, brother, maybe so.
Bunch of field goals coming our way. The crafty, crappy pick of the week didn't come through. Shouts out to Hawaii for having that start time so late. No, I'm just kidding. I won't make excuses. But, yeah, you know, it is what it is, though. I mean, 5-2 is still damn good. Moving on to week 8, we do have some interesting matchups, you know, throughout the landscape. I want to start with, I think, on paper, one of the better games of – excuse me, I've got the pickups. One of the better games of the week, probably the best on paper, in my opinion, anyway. And maybe it's because, you know, well, I suppose Oregon's not undefeated. They've been on a nice little run here. But Oregon in UCLA, UCLA, you know, they've gotten two big wins at home. Now they take the show on the road. I wonder what the over for this one is, 70.5. So, yeah, I mean, that feels like that's going to happen. Interesting matchup here, you know, beating Utah, beating Washington. Those are good wins. Maybe BYU is the best win for Oregon, and we know that, you know, they got smashed earlier this year. But What do you think about this matchup? I think it's an interesting one. It's a big test for UCLA to see if they are 100% real. Obviously, they're still undefeated, so they you know, everything's all wide open for them still. And they got a damn good quarterback, got a great running back. And that's not to take away from Nix, who, especially in the Pac-12, is a top-tier quarterback, I'd say, and former Gopher Irving, Bucky, which that nickname didn't play as well here in Minnesota, Bucky. He's doing really well, you know, as well, no doubt about it. But I noticed it opened at 5 or 5.5. It's already up to 6. What says you about this matchup? Is Ukala finally going to come back to earth and just kind of, you know, lose this game by maybe double digits? Or what do you think? Do you think it'll come down to the last handful of minutes in this one?
The one full game performance I've seen from UCLA was very impressive against Utah. I know that the Pac-12, whether it's been, again, UCLA, USC, Oregon, they've all been scoring on each other. But UCLA's offense looked really good that game 2 weeks ago against Utah. And just for impressions, that makes me think they're a hard team to beat. I will say, though, that throughout Bo Nix's career, it is crazy the kind of the split stats he has of being a home quarterback in the road, whether that is at, like, what, Jordan Heron in Auburn or at Oregon at home. He's a really good home quarterback. So, if I was to pick a winner, I would take UCLA just because I've seen them. They've looked better to me. Yeah. If I was to bet money a game, I would take the over. Because we've seen Oregon and Bo Nix can score at home. And UCLA's offense looks pretty damn good. So you need really is like a 38-35 kind of game, and you're cashing the over. So I would lean over before I pick a side, but I'm going to take UCLA just because they've looked more impressive to me this year, but that doesn't mean Oregon can't get the job done. The one time I saw Oregon play, they murdered BYU, but that really was kind of a letdown spot for BYU, so it's kind of hard to give them full credit there. But, yeah, this should be a fun one. Much like Chris, when we were talking about last week, Michigan and Penn State, and albeit they've had a lesser schedule, both of them up until this point, this is kind of like a show-me game, too, for UCLA and Oregon. Like, okay, UCLA, you've been whooping up on people. What do you got? Oregon, you're at home. What do you got? I think this game is going to maybe help us see a little bit of a brighter light for both of these teams.
Yeah, I think a letdown as far as not winning this game and losing the game finally for Ukala is coming. So I'm picking Oregon, but I'm really looking at that 6 because it was just, I think it was 5 or 5.5. It's already up to 6. And even if it's, you know, a late touchdown, I just feel like they can keep it within 6. If it goes to 6.5, I'm jumping on it. I may jump on it anyway. I like your over as well. But I'm actually going to pick Oregon to win the game. Number 5, Clemson, 7-0 against undefeated. Number 14, 6-0, the Q, Syracuse, you know, playing outside the dome. You know, they got a nice win before, or, you know, last week. They barely got by Purdue in miracle fashion. Virginia, they had to work to get it. I mean, they did have that rough, tough game at UConn, you know, because we all know that's a tough place to play. But other than that, it's been home cooking, home. Everything's been home. Now they got to go on the road. I'm picking Clemson here, but the only thing I'm wondering is, can they – it's 13.5 right now. I think it opened at 13. Kind of thinking Cuse can sneak under there. I haven't made the bet or anything like that, but I'm looking at that going, I think Syracuse can slide under that 13.5, but I do feel like Clemson's going to win at home.
Whenever I've watched Syracuse play, I don't think that quarterback Schrader is just that good just for my eye test. I know his numbers look good, team's undefeated, but their offense, it's never too fluid for me. And when I've seen them play, they've also won the games at home. They beat Purdue at home. They beat NC State at home. Again, not that I'm high on Clemson's quarterback Uiagalelei, because he still is nothing comparable for high end quarterbacks in the country.
He's
but
a lot better than he was last year, though.
That is true. He is making progress, but I just think that you're outside the Carrier Dome. I don't think that quarterback is quite as good as the numbers show, and you're probably playing one of the better or best defenses in your conference. I would lean Clemson, and I think Vegas has shown you that by making it 13.5, because when you look at the rankings and the numbers, you're like, oh, okay, well, this should be kind of a close pick'em game. But you're getting almost two touchdowns, and I don't believe – I watched Syracuse last week. That Schrader was healthy. I don't think there was any crazy injuries for Syracuse. So I think that the spread indicates the difference of these teams, and I'm going to lean with the spread there. I just think that Clemson's a more superior team, and I don't think that Syracuse offense travels on the road like it would in the Cuse Dome.
Yeah. That's – Clemson does have a way of just like – well, you know, Dabo, sometimes he'll just sit on it. He'll be like, all right, we got the game, let's just sit on it. So I'm wondering if that's the case. We're going to get to that Ole Miss LSU game, and I skipped by it or something looking at the odds. I did not realize that they're an underdog in that game. So we'll get to that. We will definitely get to that. Let's go back-to-back in the ever-entertaining the whole year long. I mean, offensively, it's always entertaining. But the Big 12, Texas visiting Oklahoma State, coming off a loss. It'll be interesting to see if their mind is where, you know, they're thinking of that 17-point lead they had on TCU. Texas is a 6-point favorite on the road, and then also Kansas State and TCU. I saw that at like 4.5 or 5. It's already down to 3.5. You know, maybe the hangover is real. Two big matchups here, important matchups in the Big 12, Marshall.
Why is Texas getting 6 points at Oak State? What is
State don't
Texas
have that Iowa State defense, don't you? Yeah, I know. I wondered myself.
I mean, okay, you had a moral victory against Bama. Okay, you played in title, give you that. You beat Oklahoma, but I mean, that was like versus a quarterback couldn't throw a ball.
Yep, that's true.
And you beat Iowa State, which again by 3 and you're favored by 14. I'm not saying that Texas is hideous this year. I think they've improved this year, but you lost to Texas Tech. Like,
they're favored by 16.5,
17
at times.
And I don't think Spencer Sanders got hurt yet, because we were watching that Oak State K-State game.
Well, he didn't look healthy, I'll say that.
Maybe a little banged. Okay, and that could be something where Vegas knows.
And Oklahoma State but, is not the defense it had been previously.
True.
So
you're right.
They are giving up 28 a game, but, you know, I mean, look at who they played, though, too. You know, some pretty high-octane offenses.
Yeah, unless that Spencer Saunders injury is worse than we're aware of, which could be possibly completely true based on the point spread, I don't think there's any business that Texas should be more than a 3-point favorite at most. I mean, again, they lost at Texas Tech, and when Texas was playing UTSA San Antonio, that game was a touchdown game, a touchdown difference going into the fourth quarter. Like, and now you're giving them 6. So I would look into the Saunders injury, and if he is hurt, then that is a different element. But again, I'm not saying Texas can't win the game, Chris, but you're almost getting a touchdown on the road against a team that, you know, you're always going to be kind of neck and neck with. This spread to me makes no sense whatsoever. So I would take Oak State for sure. I mean, I think Oak State could win the game. So, but take Oak State plus 6. I think this is a coin flip game at best, but if you're going to give me an away team, and they got to win by a touchdown to cover a bet, I would gladly take Oak State here. Do a little research on the injury, because maybe that's what Lyon is talking to us. But, yeah, I don't see this one, brother. Both these teams have been pretty evenly played. Texas has maybe had a bit of a harder schedule because you got to throw Bama in there. But, man, that's a ton of respect, my friend. That's a lot of respect.
Yeah, I think so, too. In Vegas and according to ESPN's, no longer the power – Index. According to ESPN Analytics, it just says they must have lost the rights to that.
the BPI or FBI.
Well, I don't know what. Something went wrong there because they just changed.
Well, dude, like, don't you know goalposts are expensive, Chris. The economy's changing. Tennessee needs a loan.
Speaking of inflation, they inflated Texas here right now. But, you know, maybe that is the case. Sanders, like I said, I didn't get to see the whole game in its entirety.
Sure.
Because I was so tuned into that Alabama-Tennessee. But I did notice it a little bit, and then I've kind of heard other, you know, folks talk about it on the podcast saying, hey, you know, he didn't look all that great. So, yeah, you're right. Kind of.
Okay, so I just ran a quick Google. Spencer Saunders playing through injury, rumors swirling about availability against Texas. That was posted 4 hours ago on an Oklahoma radio station. So that that makes sense. That's a logical reason. Okay, I got you.
I thought you were going to go post again. I was like, man, what are we doing here? Okay, that's a good Google. That is a good Google.
Sure.
You got to do your Googles on this stuff. And you know, I got, like, I think it's covers.com. They do a good injury list, but we all know it's tough to know in college football. And it's like you got to really just – on some things that you're not clear of, you just got to wait. Just like the Alabama and Young. We didn't officially know. We figured he'd play. But we didn't know until the last second, you know. So it's like, okay, put your bet in real quick. Staying in that Big 12, can TCU do it again? I mean, they're at home.
Jesus.
That helps, no doubt.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is a hell of a stretch here. And that Kansas game, Daniels, if he doesn't get knocked out of that Kansas game, who knows? I mean, you know, Bean's a good player, but he doesn't get the herky jerky and the ultimate playmaking that Daniels had. They may have not won that game. That was a fun second half of that game. But how many of these games, Marshall, can you just, you know, you already had it, like you said, with SMU. The back-to-back games, very tight games. At some point, something's got to give. Kansas State does have a loss, but it's to a quality, now ranked, I believe, Tulane squad. They do all right against the run. I mean, on paper, beyond the passing yards, which clearly favors 158 to 297, clearly favors TCU. Now, TCU's given up more points. They're giving up 26.5, but, you know, like I said, some of those kind of look into it. I don't know what to think about that, but what do you think here, man? Can they do it again? Because this is a – Kansas State will slow you down. We know that. Got the slow-mo offense again. But I still – every time Kansas State's on right now, just like it used to be years ago with that quarterback, the slow, you know, they're always like, what's this running back doing? You know, like, dude, that's the obvious, man. Calm down. Like, watch, he's about to get 13 yards. But it is kind of interesting. That's another thing I love about college football, the amount of offenses and defenses you see throughout, you know, a year. But what do you think about this, man? Because if TCU wins this game, I mean, they're already, you know, for real and all that. I'm not trying to be like, oh, man, if they win this game, they're
sure.
Really for real. Because they still have Texas Tech. They still have at Texas, still at Baylor and Iowa State. That just shows you how fun this Big 12 is this year. But what do you think about this one, man? Because I got to admit, in late September, SMU is a good, decent club, right? But I got to admit, you know, they're 3-3 right now. So it's not like they're a great club or anything. But when they, you know, going into that game with Kansas and even before that, I just didn't really know where, you know, what TCU would be, and here they are. But can you do it again week after week like this, or is it just ultimate letdown coming?
I don't know.
It wouldn't be an ultimate, you know, letdown.
You're at home. You're at home. It's a night game. The place is going to be going crazy. I should maybe actually go to the game. That would probably be well worth a ticket to experience that game. But Oklahoma State's one of the schools that doesn't give a shit. They seem to ruin Oklahoma's they ruin Oklahoma season every year. They don't mind the traveling. I mean, and you at some point you got to be up for that letdown. But if we're looking at all seriousness, this game is for first place in the Big 12. Like all the chips are on the table. But if you're looking strictly from what we know about college football for the combined 70 years plus me and my co-hosts have been alive, like everything would tell you that this is a letdown spot eventually. But I guess you're at home, you rally the troops one more time, then you have a letdown spot. Yeah, you're at home, it's a night game.
Down 17 against the slow-mo, though.
No. So, yeah, you're at home, it's a night game. That is a positive. But, man, how many more times can you – and, again, but both are 3-0. Like, you literally are fighting for to stay on top of the Big 12. So, this should be a hell of a fun game. And I do like that it is at the end of the day. But, God, I just think just from a gambling purpose alone, Chris, I think K-State is the pick because TCU just had another crazy – shit, double overtime win at home. And now you're going to play again at home against a team who really doesn't care where they play. Like, I got to pick K-State. And if TCU wins, I will start off next week podcast with my opening rant giving them props. Because, again, how many more times can that happen?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I got to go. I got to take K-State. And if TCU wins again, dude, well deserved. Keep it up. You're still on your heater. Like that'd be insane.
Yeah, I mean this one, it's literally like I'm on the fence. I mean they have a better defense. We know that their offense isn't as good, but I think it feels like a little bit better than what the numbers tell you. But just because they're so run heavy. That's the thing about TCU though. We say, oh, Kansas State's run heavy. 244. Well. They're about 230, 229 TCU on top of the almost 300 yards they air it out for. So, you know, can K-State once in a while hit something explosive in the pass game? Because, you know, they do – TCU gives up 264 a game. And I don't know, man. I mean, they limited Texas Tech to 28 points, which, you know, that's a good club. So – I'm stuck on this one, but I'm kind of feeling the home court or the home field, though.
True, that helps.
I'm going to go TCU, but I'm not confident at all with this. I'll say this, though. If it goes down to 3, I may jump on that, but I don't know, man. I'm just in between. I may just stay away from this game. Other games, really, with Alabama, Mississippi.
But, hey, just quickly to wrap that one up. We to look at it from a K-State schedule perspective, Chris, you won at Iowa State 10-9. You go at TCU this game for a crazy game. Then you host Oak State. Then you host Texas. Then go to Baylor. So, this is almost one you got to have because if you're K-State, if you lose this one, now you're game behind TCU. And then you got to host Oak State and Texas back-to-back weeks. That's tough. Damn. The Big 12 is providing us a lot of fun, man, a lot of fun.
It really has, man. I mean, it's starting to feel like the college basketball the last couple of years with the Big 12, man. And it's legit teams, too, that you'd be like, oh, these are legit, dude, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of feel like the question about the Mississippi State, Alabama, Mississippi State visiting Alabama, it really just comes down to can Bama win by 21 points? My mind. Penn State, Minnesota, it feels about 4.5, feels about right. Minnesota, even though he didn't play good in the game, their starting quarterback, who's been there about 14 years, he got hurt, and he's not in the protocol, but he took a shot to the head, and I can't remember who else he got hurt. But he may play or may not, but, man, I kind of like Penn State to cover on that. I feel like they're going to win possibly by double digits. And then obviously Ole Miss LSU, we'll save that for last as far as the top 25. Oh, Memphis and Tulane. Memphis almost pulled off the upset of the week last week. in like triple overtime or whatever it was. They did cover, though, as a plus 5.5. Now they're a plus 7 on the road. Can they summon the energy to shock Tulane, who's 6-1? Kind of interesting there. But we'll just go down the line. Bama, can they win by 21?
No, I think this is one of the best teams Mike Leach has had. All they do is throw, and as you've seen, Bama's secondary has trouble stopping the pass. So I would take Mississippi State plus 21. I doubt they'll win, but I'm sure Bama will be pissed off, have a good week of practice, but that secondary ain't getting fixed overnight.
That's for sure. And then you think Penn State with an inexperienced quarterback for Minnesota, potentially, think they're going to cover, kind of lick their wounds and say, hey, remember, we were up at half. You think they can beat Minnesota by 5 points and cover?
Or just if with an inexperienced quarterback, I would lean Penn State if Morgan's not there. Yeah, that's a tough spot for them.
And last but not least, when it comes to the top 25, Ole Miss on the road, 230. It's 230, so that's positive. Things are looking up already. I don't know what it opened at, but 1.5 favorite LSU. What says you about this game, man? Because, like I said, I missed it. I knew they were playing, but I just, you know how sometimes you just scroll by something and I didn't even pay attention to it. I looked up like, wait, what? Oh, my goodness. Okay, this is going to get interesting. And it does seem like, you know, we just talked about how LSU is kind of getting their stuff together a little bit. Speaking of Mississippi State, they beat Mississippi State pretty handily. In the second half, actually. What do you think about this one? I just did not notice that they were actually worthy underdog on this one. And I think it opened right around there. I'm actually Googling it right now. Why don't you break that game down for us, sir?
If Ole Miss keeps Ole Miss is
minus. It opened at my – Ole Miss was a one-point favorite.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, hell, LSU's been on on the Vegas' side. Vegas made Tennessee a three-point, you know, favorite in LSU, and that game was over in about 10 minutes. So I do think there's a little bit of LSU love. But, hey, if you're Ole Miss, this is your toughest game of the year so far. Okay, thankfully it's not a night game. That's a benefit to Lane Kiffin and the boys. But – you just got to stick to your plan. Run the ball down their throat and stick to it and hope your defense makes a couple of turnovers. I do think this will be the toughest test so far for Jackson Dart. Again, as you can tell, this is not the regular Ole Miss offensive passing. But as my co-host said, they're running the you-know-what out of the ball, and they have been. Like, Ole Miss is putting up numbers like they're like a service academy, and they're not running the option, I promise you. So if you can – win the turnover possession battle and make it a close game, I think Ole Miss can definitely win. Well, as we've seen so far this year, LSU, they're a good, talented team, but this is not, you know, we're not going back a couple of years with Joe Burrow and Coach O. Like, this LSU team is, they're probably really are on par. And if Ole Miss can control the clock, and the other part is just, can you control that Jaden Daniels? Because whenever I've seen LSU play this year, Chris, Daniels has really hurt people with his feet and kind of made plays happen with his arm. Yep. And this Ole Miss defense has done a pretty good job so far this year. When they did play their toughest opponent on offense, which was that Levis for Kentucky, and they forced a lot of turnovers on him. They've kind of checked out a little bit mentally against Vandy and Auburn, which hopefully was just that moment itself, just checking out. But yeah, I'm going to take Ole Miss to win, control the game, try to control Daniels in the pocket and sneak out of Happy Valley. But again, if you can run the ball another 40 to 50 times a game, you're going to have a chance to win on the road or at home. So I'll take Ole Miss with the few baby points of, I guess, maybe get 1.5 or plus 2. Yeah.
You should probably jump on those points, because if they opened as a favorite, it's probably not going to go much higher that LSU way. Maybe if it was
probably
7 o'clock at night or some shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought you did a good job breaking that down. I think Ole Miss will win that game. A couple of other items, and we do got to put the metal to the pedal here because it is, we're at almost 110. I just realized that. Kansas, Baylor. Baylor's an 8-point favorite. I'm looking at that going, are we positive they can win the game by that much? Here's another one, West Virginia on the road at Texas Tech. Texas Tech right now, do I think they'll win? Yeah, sure. But they're 7-point favorites. I'm looking, I wonder. Another one I wonder about, we just talked about it, Purdue on the road as a 2-point favorite, not a 5 or a 6. They just have to win by 3 at Wisconsin. And no, Wisconsin doesn't give up a bunch of points, but it's not like Iowa, as far as that, good of a defense. This year I'm speaking, of course, Wisconsin's had a ton of great defenses in the past. But I'm looking at that going, I think Purdue can accomplish that. Any other items before we get to crappy pick of the week here, sir?
I'm with you. I would definitely take Purdue. I think that's a solid bet. Wisconsin, even with the new coach, that team has just been struggling. And when you get Purdue and you get even a couple of points, they're gonna fight for your bet. That team really doesn't have too many shitty games, and they're lucky. I wish they could host Ohio State tonight and have like an Urban Meyer beatdown they had like 4 or 5 years ago. I would like Purdue in that situation. BYU plays Liberty. Liberty is 6-1. I know they had their quarterback go pro, but BYU is a 7-point favorite at Liberty. Huh. I would research that because BYU, they've literally not had an easy game all year, and Liberty is 6-1. That one, we're talking about just bets to look at, man. And it's, yeah, at Liberty, and you're getting almost a full touchdown. That one's very surprising, my friend. That one doesn't
Liberty doesn't have the offense that he did last year, but yeah, you're right. Huh. They're getting killed on the run too. .87 a game. Yeah, dude. That's an interesting one. That might be an against the spread that we got to play.
Mm-hmm. And if you're talking about Texas Tech, West Virginia, God, that's a letdown for Texas Tech. Those are probably two of the worst teams in the Big 12. Again, if you're going to bet Texas Tech, I would try to get 6.5 because that seems like a game that's probably going to come down to the wire. It's one of those bottom of the barrel games where, it's not Texas or OU in there. So Texas Tech might have a little bit of a letdown spot, but I would have to find a certain angle to be really amped to bet that game just because, yeah.
Iowa State are the bottom too.
God, that's so crazy to hear you actually say those words. That's why I've been loving the Big 12 this year. And hey, for Baylor and KU, just take the over. It's 16.5. Take the over because KU's been scoring. Baylor's going to score on KU. KU's going to score back. 16.5.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So I will lean the over on that, my friend. But yeah, I think that about. Any other games you got?
Nah.
Okay, cool. All right, here we go. Every week I'm supposed to find the worst game of the week, and we're this is a little bit different. But Chris, we're hopping on a plane from Hawaii, we're flying to Colorado State, but the kicker is Hawaii's on that plane with us.
It is
the worst game of the week, hands down. It is. I'm sorry, and there was a couple of games that were just as bad, but the point spreads were like multiple digits. Like I can't do a 13-point spread. So Hawaii Rainbow Warriors are traveling to Colorado State Rams. Hawaii's 2-5. Colorado State's 1-5. It is at Canvas Stadium in Fort Collins. You got to pay $25 to get into this game. Chris, it's at 3 o'clock. There's no TV network broadcast next to it. Almost every game you get will have some type of TV logo next to it. This is not ESPN Plus, CBS Sports, or anything. This game may not be allowed to be seen on television. What does your gut say as Hawaii stays on the crafty pick of the week? They're racking up some air miles for us. What's your gut say, brother?
This is a tough one, dude. First of all, I guess when I look at it, what are the odds that Hawaii's going to win back-to-back games this year? right? On the road. That does, you know, play into things. But on the other end, it's like, damn, like, well, they did. The only win they got was at Nevada. So they actually had to go on the road there for Colorado State. So they both have a win over Nevada. Wow. And, man, this is crazy. 12 points. Colorado State is putting up 12 points a game. Given what they do, I mean, that's, they only rush 76 yards a game. That's just horrendous, dude. And I was going to say, I looked at that rush allowed, 212. I'm like, okay, what do we – oh, they only get 76 yards. Great. Yeah, this one's tough, dude. This one is damn. Boy, this is tough. I'm just going to go off the odds that – you know, they're coming off two losses. Maybe they can win again. I'm just going to say Hawaii's not winning back-to-back games. I don't know. There's been some close games lately, losing to Utah State. Utah State beat them at home. Great. This is not the Utah State from, you know, a couple of years ago. Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm going to go, what is it, the Rams? Are they the Rams?
Yes, the Rams.
I'm going to go Colorado. They're still pissed from getting beat 51-7 Michigan earlier in the year, so they're going to get their dub. So, yeah. Oh, my God. Third string QB leads Utah to win over Colorado State. Jesus. Oh, man. Okay, well, I think the audience knows I'm herky-jerky on this one, but I'm going to go with the Rams, sir.
And last week for alumni battles, we realized that Hawaii had a couple of football players. If you scroll through Colorado State, Chris, on a famous alumni in the top Google bar, when you get to about 50 people in, they have that actor Jason Momoa. he was the first name I recognized from Colorado State. So I'm going to tip the cap to the actor Jason Momoa, that I'm sure the female audience likes. And I'll take the Colorado State Rams with my co-host in the crappy pick of the week. I hope next week we are talking about a goalpost being torn down and thrown into some part of the country. I heard that slows down global warming as well. So on that note, I'm happy for my good friend. She was singing Rocky Top leaving the bar, so it was props to her. When your college football team wins a special rivalry game, there's few better feelings like that. In all honesty. So we'll be back next Monday, breaking down another crazy Big 12 week. It's just guaranteed to happen. And can TCU win yet again? The boys are out. Have a good one. Peace.